Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. It's our delight to be with you this bright Monday morning. I am thankful for the privilege to come to you by way of radio. Keep in mind, as we face the issues, we do so based on a biblical worldview. It's not ideological. It's not philosophical. It is theological, and under that theological banner of the of looking at the Scripture on a biblical worldview basis, that includes the home, the church, and government. God created the home first. Then God created government and then the church, and in that order. And anything that falls into the category of either of those three, we as Christians, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, as pastors, we have the responsibility of standing and facing the issues in our theological, doctrinal, biblical teaching, whether it be preaching from the pulpit or the classroom, or as I am doing by way of radio. It's our responsibility to confront evil and call sin, sin, and stand on the truth of the Word of God. Jesus himself said in John 17:17, thy word is truth. And so therefore we look at the truth book for our decision making as to what we ought to do in society today. Ladies and gentlemen, you can call us at any time during the course of this broadcast by dialing 401-1413. If you're out of the area code, it's 904-401-1413. You can jump in the dialogue and the discussion at any point. And just a moment after the monologue, I'm going to be introducing Blake Harper. Blake is responsible for Crossover Jacksonville, and we're going to be talking about some serious local issues. But first, by way of my monologue, I want to talk about several things that have been taking place in the past few days that I believe we need to be brought up to date on and talk about them from a biblical standpoint as to what is happening. Perhaps you've heard the latest in relationship to national and international news. I don't know about you, but I enjoy listening to good conservative news broadcast that keeps us up to date what's happening on a global basis. And then looking at it through the prism of the Word of God, it gives us as Christians an opportunity to see what God's doing from a global level, and then look at it through the lens of the Scripture and to see what he's doing. Perhaps you've heard or you've watched some of the news in relationship to Israel in the past several days, where one of the Iranian, drones flying over Israel territory in southern Syria, and Israel wiped it out and then went into the airspace of Syria and wiped out about, I believe it's about 100, 120 other sites that they literally destroyed. But ladies and gentlemen, when we look at it, we think, and some on a global basis are blaming Israel, but Israel's just protecting themselves. They have a right to do so as a sovereign nation. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm thankful that we have a president that's now designated Jerusalem as the headquarters, center of all that is to be done in Israel. Jerusalem's been the capital of Israel all of these years, but it has been shunned by American politicians for so many years. But that linked with what we're seeing with the what they're calling now the war that's being flamed and the flames being fanned in Israel as a result of Iran coming through Syria. They already have missile sites. I believe they said 120 or 120,000, I've forgotten the number, of missile sites in Lebanon, all aimed at Israel. And now they're discovering that there are mega numbers of sites located in Syria, all aimed at Israel. So Israel has the right to protect itself. But ladies and gentlemen, when we see this, we need to recognize and remember Luke 20:28. The Scripture says, look up, lift up your eyes, for your redemption draweth nigh. And so I think as we see Israel, we can recognize that Israel, the nation of Israel, is literally God's prophetic clock for us to be able to look at and see, as I call it, the countdown on that clock for all of the prophetic future for the world. Israel is the one that we can focus on. Whatever God is doing in Israel, we can see what God is doing in that prophetic clock, if you will. But ladies and gentlemen, that's just part of the big picture of what's been happening in the last several days. I don't know if you've been keeping up with the House bill and the Senate bills in Tallahassee and what's being moved and what's being sandbagged in committees, or some of the bills not even going to committee to try to prevent them. But there's a bill, and I have lost the bill number, but there's a bill in the House that was introduced by some of the wackos in Tallahassee that wants to take away our Second Amendment rights. It is the removal of the Second Amendment rights by way of disarming the Floridians, and they're doing so based on trying to cancel the Stand Your Ground law, the castle doctrine, as some call it. We have the right in our castle, our home, to stand our ground. If a burglar comes in or an intruder, someone to harm, tear down, or destroy, we have the right to stand and shoot back, if you will. And so there are those, the liberals in Tallahassee, that want to remove that right. And I'm gravely concerned about it. And there's a good follow-up on that, and it's not necessarily in the state of Florida, but here's an article that is frightening, and it should be to every law-abiding citizen that's under the sound of my voice. A Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency officer was asked to leave the Outback Steakhouse in Cleveland, that is Cleveland, Tennessee, in Cleveland Friday night because he had his service weapon on him. In a public post on Facebook, Andrew Ward shared about his experience. He said he was asked by the manager to remove his weapon and take it back and put it in his vehicle. He explained that he had to have it on his person because it was part of his uniform. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but any sworn officer with his weapon is considered part of his uniform. And you're out of uniform if your weapon is not on you personally at any time you have that uniform on. And so he was explaining that it's part of his uniform. He could not take it off. And according to the post on his website or on his Facebook site, the manager made a phone call, then came back and asked the officer to leave Outback because the company policy was that Outback Steakhouse is a gun-free zone. Ladies and gentlemen, they serve some good steaks, mm-hmm. but if they have a gun-free zone mentality, mm-hmm. we as constitutional Christians need to say no. We just won't do business with Outback Steakhouse. And I think it would behoove every citizen on the sound of my voice to call your local Outback Steakhouse and ask specifically, is that your policy for your local Outback Steakhouse? If they tell you yes, say, I'm sorry, I will not be eating steak at your place of business anymore. I don't know about you, but I'm fed up with these do-gooders that want to tear down and destroy our constitutional rights. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Youngblood. This is Let's Face the Issues. You can call it 401-1413. Join in this dialogue and discussion. And further from my elongated monologue today, covering several issues before we introduce our guest, and we have some very poignant conversation about some other issues on a local level. But I want us to understand, ladies and gentlemen, this is frightening enough to realize this taking place. But I think perhaps one of the most frightening news articles of late goes back to what is taking place with our fine drugstores, Walgreens. Now, I've done business with Walgreens for some 25 years, almost exclusively. But I'm saddened to say that Walgreens has just announced a policy. They've got 8,100 stores nationwide. 8,100 stores. Ladies and gentlemen, what I'm about to say is shocking to me, and it should be frightening and shocking to everyone listening to the sound of my voice. Walgreens has just introduced a store policy nationally that their bathrooms will no longer be male and female. You hear me? Mm-mm. You can go in any bathroom that you perceive your sexuality to be at that moment. It started in California, of no other place, where a male was seen going into the ladies' bathroom, and one of the store clerks stopped and said, you can't do that. And the individual insisted that she was female, even though she was male. She insisted she was female. And because the store stopped it, then there was a suit that ensued. And as a result of that, the settlement agreement was that Walgreens would simply allow any person that's confused about their sexuality, the LGBT crowd, the sodomite group, the transgender group, those that are confused about their sexuality, that they can simply perceive that they are male or female and go into the restroom of that designation. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm petrified with that. You recall just a couple of years ago what took place with Target stores on a national level. Target made that sad, stupid, yes, I'm calling it stupid, ignorant decision of they were going to appease and satisfy the sodomite community, the transgender community, by simply opening their bathrooms to whoever wanted to go in. I don't know if you're aware, ladies and gentlemen, but as a result of that, some 3 million people have signed a petition to boycott Target stores. As a result of that, their bottom line profitability has dropped some 20%. Some $1 billion in actual dollars have been taken out of their coffers as a result of it. And if you want to know my exact response, I pray that God will use that to close them, to close Target stores nationally because of their total disregard for the safety of the women and the children, the boys and the girls, and the families in America by simply saying any pedophile can go in. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, there have been dozens upon dozens upon dozens of suits against Target stores as a result of young ladies going into the dressing rooms to dress and being peered upon and recorded by pedophiles entering into the dressing rooms. It's not just the bathrooms, it's the dressing rooms, the locker rooms, etc. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is a national problem, but we'll find our upstanding businesses doing business on that basis. We as moral, ethical citizens need to say, enough is enough. We're not going to subject our families to such pedophilia and the possibility of being harmed or hurt in the bathrooms and the dressing rooms. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen, my recommendation is that you call Walgreens, your local Walgreens or others. In fact, Walgreens' telephone number on a national level is 1-800-925-4733. 1-800-925-4733. You can call Walgreens and you can tell them that if you do not cease and desist this detrimental policy that's going to destroy our families, we'll cease and desist with anything that will have to do with purchasing merchandise, filling prescriptions at your drugstores. They need to understand that we're not going to sit back, roll over, and play dead as moral, ethical Christian citizens in America. We need to let them know. And the only way most of these companies recognize seriousness is in the purse. When we say we will not spend God's dollars in a place that disregards the families. And so therefore, ladies and gentlemen, that's frightening. But I want us to understand there's one other thing in my elongated monologue before we have a discussion on some local issues. California is opening what they're calling the heroin injection centers. Heroin injection centers. What is this for? What are they doing? Simply put, it is a policy that will allow the taxpayers in the state of California to pay for and to provide services to inject heroin users with clean needles and, yes, taxpayer heroin. Yes, I understand. In their initial pilot program, they're opening two of them. Yes, I do understand that they're saying that it'd be paid for by private donations. But yes, I do understand that that was the mantra back in 1996 when they first started allowing marijuana to be sold in some fashion, that it was going to be distributed, it was going to be sold, and it'd be through some nonprofit, non-taxable institutions. But ladies and gentlemen, that's just a lie to open Pandora's box. Here's an article that says, California heroin injection centers to open. Who says, quote, this is the title of the article, who says marijuana isn't the gateway to drugs? Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the laxity and the lunacy of our politicians in order to get greater and greater tax revenue. They have no concern for our families, for the freedoms that we enjoy, biblically speaking and constitutionally speaking. And we'll talk about some of these same things in a similar fashion for Duval County. Yes, for Jacksonville, Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, you can dive in this discussion by calling 401-1413, 904-401-1413. But with this heroin injection centers, ladies and gentlemen, I want us to understand marijuana, and I can prove it with the historical research. Marijuana is the de facto gateway for all other drugs. Now, I understand that there's the opioid pandemic across the nation as a result of some overriding of prescriptions for painkillers, et cetera. But, ladies and gentlemen, listen very carefully to that. In my most humble opinion, is a minuscule element of it. We have an opioid bill that I believe has already been instituted in Duval County that will provide funds and funding and something to help those that already own the opioids. The governor's already allocated $50 million for the state of Florida. Across the nation, I believe some $136-137 million has been introduced to help states to squelch the opioid crisis. But ladies and gentlemen, I want us to understand that if we're doing that, then shut the valve off. Do not allow marijuana to be sold as supposedly a medical marijuana, which is simply a legalized pot shop, and we'll have thousands of them in the state of Florida if we're not very, very careful. But I want us to understand we have some things very similar that's taking place in Duval County here in Jacksonville. And Brother Blake Harper, which represents Crossover Jacksonville, is here on the mic with us this morning. And we're going to be talking about some of those things. Blake, welcome to Let's Face the Issues today. And I want us to talk about some of these things that's heavy on your heart, and it should be on every listener's heart, in relationship to what we've attempted to do in the city of Jacksonville to stop the HRO, the Human Rights Ordinance. I call it the Human Reprobate Ordinance, based on Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. But nevertheless, let's just look at it as what the bill calls for it, what's been taking place. Blake, tell us about some of the events of late that's trying to prevent the taxpayers in Duval County, trying to prevent us from having a say-so at the ballot box about what is legalized and what becomes legislation in our city.
I want to first start, before I say that, talk about that. I want to first go back. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to go to YouTube and you need to listen to Dr. Youngblood's sermon yesterday about the reality of compromise. He spoke very clearly and very distinctly about the fact that Paul called Peter out for apostasy. Folks, that's what's happening here in town. The whole situation with Peter falling back into legalism, to falling back to apostasy, falling back to cowering in front of the legalistic Jewish believers who thought that circumcision of the flesh should remain as opposed to circumcision of the heart, of the soul. That's what's happening here, folks. We are falling back from the work that we're supposed to do. This issue is thousands of years old about how we do not confront properly and righteously the sins that occur in our community, and that's exactly what we've got here. A year ago, the HRO was passed by the city council, and Lenny Curry
abdicated. Passed, by the way, if I can interrupt, Blake, it was passed over the unanimous objections of the taxpayers. The taxpayers said no, no, no to an HRO. The city council members rammed it down our throats anyway.
That's correct. And an important thing about what the city council folks did was that there was a particular candidate running, Anna Brochet, who is now our city council president, who in the weeks running up to her election clearly stated she was going to protect the women and the children and the churches. Yet when it came time for her to stand up and do that, she was silent. She was as silent as whatever you want to consider, the dead of night, when she had the ability as the head of the chairman of the finance committee to allow for public comment, she said nothing. When it came time for the vote, when it came time for debate and questions, she said nothing. And when it came time for the vote, she voted for it. Now, the reason I bring it to Anna Brochet is because that there was one specific vote that was necessary to uphold the veto of Lenny Curry. And that vote would that vote was Anna Brochet. So she sat on city council and she basically reneged or welched on her promise to protect the families. Lenny Curry likewise reneged on his promise, welched on his promise to protect the families. And so now, folks, we have the HRO. So basically what's happened here, folks, is that city council and Mayor Curry have stood against the stated overwhelming will of the people. Now, the whole situation with Empower Jacksonville, we're doing the petition, we call it the Citizens Veto Amendment, was to hold folks accountable. We can look at not only HRO, but now we have something coming along called JEA. They want to sell JEA. And folks, I'm going to use a very strong word here. That is simply the theft of our funds, the theft of our money, for very simply for projects to make the mayor look good. The mayor's office has already been asked about whether or not they'd use the $4 billion to deal with a pension issue, which was caused by another mayor. And they've been told no. So in essence, what this $4 billion will do will be to go will be a $4 billion political campaign for Lenny Curry, so he looks like Mr. Wonderful. That's the first example. Then of course, we've got the Better Jacksonville plan itself. The Better Jacksonville plan promised all these things, and there is a laundry list of projects, particularly on the west side, which have yet to be taken care of because their funding ran short. So, folks, what we've got going on right now in this time, the HRO really brought out the issue of city government, of the political elite, overriding the will of the people. We've got two issues that we know about. Now we've got the HRO. We've got a situation where we have to have a tool. We have to have a tool to hold our city officials elected accountable, and this petition, which right now is stuck dead in the water because the Office of the General Counsel, that would be appointed by Mayor Curry, the Office of General Counsel has determined that the petition is legally deficient. Now, we are fighting this, folks. Empower Jacksonville is fighting it. There will be legal action taken. Whatever the circumstances are, folks, this is an ongoing issue. And whatever form this tool becomes, it's important for you to be aware of it and understand that whether we elect officials who say they're going to do things and they get off the reservation, we have to have this ability to bring them back on the reservation with some way to hold them accountable. That's what the goal of Empower Jacksonville is.
Brother Blake, it might be necessary. I'm sure that many of the people listening understand when you say this petition, but I think it would be perhaps needful. What is the petition you're talking about? Tell them about Empower Jacksonville, the petition specifically. What is at stake, and what had we done to this point with getting the petitions, and then it had to go to the General Counsel's office, and tell us that process.
Okay, so Empower Jacksonville are very simply local folks who've watched City Council get off the rails. The driving issue that has brought this about, after all said and done over time, has been the HRO, the Human Rights Ordinance. And so what this petition was is at this point in time, we call the Citizens Veto Amendment. What it does is it allows the people of Jacksonville to decide if they want to keep a law on the books which they overwhelmingly do not want to have. And it requires, just like the charter amendment for what we're trying to accomplish with this, it requires between 29 and 30,000 people to say, yes, that is a bad law, and yes, we need to give it to the people for the people to decide if the people want to keep it or not. So the idea would be is if city council passes a law, they've been told overwhelmingly not to pass the law, that the city council's that law will be placed before the people for the people to decide if they want to keep it. And that just very simply is a huge threat to the political elite, to the people who contribute hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, to get local city council and local local individual local officials elected to do their bidding. It's a huge threat to them, and they're going to do everything they can to keep it from happening.
And one of the major problems, Blake, is I see it, and I've seen it for many, many years, dealing with issues here in DeVol County for some 40 years now in relationship to legislation passed and the Good Old Boys Club that's paying for it, with the process that we see and the General Counsel's office now saying that this referendum by way of petition cannot go forward. They use some minuscule argument that the wording was not correct, et cetera, et cetera. But I've said for several months now that that's going to be the end result with what the General Counsel's office says. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Blake, that DeVol County, we've got 67 counties in the state of Florida. DeVol County, I believe, is the only county out of the 67 that cannot reverse legislation by the citizens' referendum. We have the right as people in DeVol County to be able to say what kind of laws we want to rule over us and what kind of laws that we're going to allow ourselves to be subjected to. And even beyond that, our state constitution has been modified many, 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 many times in the past 40 years that I've been in Jacksonville, simply by way of citizens' referendums. If we can change our state constitution, and if all of the other counties can change and reverse any legislative action, why can't Jacksonville do the same thing? That's my dilemma. That's my question. That's the thing that is the bone in my craw, if you please, that causes me to have major indigestion, is that we're saying by the General Counsel's ruling now, the city, how would you say, legal minds, they're saying that we can't do that because it will cause a super majority then that we could overturn any law.
Right.
Well, we're not going to try to change and overturn just any law. But if it's bad for the people, as this human rights ordinance that literally allows the perverts, the pedophiles, the transsexuals, and those with the LGBTQI and all the other acronyms they want to add to it, for them, those that are confused about their sexuality, to literally force Christians to do and say things that they ought not to do, and their conscience is against it, biblically speaking. But as the HRO is presently worded, it will allow the Human Rights Commission to hold any businessman into court. He could be fined $500 and up to 5 years in prison as a result of not obeying the human rights ordinance. So I find it incredulous that now the General Counsel's office are saying that we can't go forward.
Actually, let's go back for just a moment, because Dan Merkel, who is the policy director for Jasmine, the proselytizing organization within the Duval County school system, is one of the field generals for the Equality Jacksonville, was bemoaning the fact that they took out the jail time out of the law. They wanted to keep it in there. So no, there's no jail time from our understanding of it. They're even the other side even complains about it. But here, folks, what I do want to do is I want you to be aware that tomorrow is the anniversary of as far as the HRO being passed down at City Council, and I will be down at City Council tomorrow. I invite everybody else to come down. You have an opportunity at public comment to speak your mind about this travesty of lawmaking that they've done. You'll also have the opportunity to speak about the appointment Lenny Curry has going before the JEA board. Again, this is another issue of where Lenny Curry is trying to take $4 billion out of our pocket. There's an appointment that's coming up. So I appreciate the time for that. And thank you, Dr. Youngblood, for having me on today.
So what we're saying, the bottom line, Blake, in these final few seconds before we're off the air for today, you're saying, for ladies and gentlemen, speak up, stand up, be heard, be seen. Let your voice be heard at the city council meeting. Let them know that this is not what we're satisfied with as political leadership in DeVol County. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Youngblood. We invite you to join us again tomorrow as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal, Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.